Every parent I know has one of those stories. Not like every child has one of those stories. Every parent has one of those stories. The story about the time when your child was missing. It may have been only a couple of minutes, it may have seemed like 3 days, but so far I've not encountered a child that hasn't gone wandering at some point or another, myself included. My mom has a story about me. It's a perfectly logical place to look, just under the inside of the clothing rack in JCPenney's. But anyway, I have a story. You know, there's one child in our house, but there are two parents, so there are at least two stories about Ariana going missing. Mine comes from a time when I was living in New York. We were just, you know, we had this great little house on a small back street, which was a good thing, and the house sat up against the cemetery. And I was home with Ariana and doing whatever, you know, she was playing. I was, I'm sure, hard at work washing dishes or something. And I turned around at one point and noticed that the back door was wide open and that my child was not anywhere in the house. And so I go running out the back door. I can't even fathom going toward the front, toward the road. I go running out the back door, screaming her name. I'm yelling for her. I'm going through the graveyard because she liked to play in there and she liked to hide behind some of the stones and stuff. So I'm running around the cemetery like a lunatic, screaming for my daughter, and there are neighbors coming out of their house. And it turns out that she had gone over to the neighbor's porch because they had cool toys that she wanted to play with. And of course, by the time we find her, she's just sort of sitting there like it's the most natural thing in the world, playing with toys. And, you know, completely unafraid, completely unharmed, and I'm just having a heart attack. Benji's story about losing Ariana happened at the Monshire Museum of Science. And there were three grown adults present, him and his parents. Now, you'd think that the odds were therefore stacked in their favor, given that there were three of them and only one of her. But she's very, very fast. And so they're looking at some exhibits, and Benji turns around, take a picture of something, and his mom says, "Hey, where's Ariana?" And he's like, "She's right there behind me," and turns around, and of course, she's not. And next thing they know, they've got the entire museum like on lockdown mode, and the staff is sweeping the place. There are people out in the parking lot stopping cars and not letting anyone leave until we can find the missing child, and the whole place is going nuts. And a staff member finds Ariana on another floor of the museum, just kind of chilling and looking at dinosaurs or whatever. And she says, "You know, is your name Ariana?" "Yes." "Do you see your dad here?" "Oh yeah, he's right there." Perfectly like it was the most reasonable place for her to be in all the world, and there was no problem. And of course, her parents and grandparents were hyperventilating and freaking out. So I can kind of try to imagine how Mary and Joseph might have felt. Now, Jesus is a little bit older. He's not 4 and a half. So he's 12. So I can almost give them a little bit of slack for not noticing he wasn't there for an entire day, because first of all, 12-year-old boys kind of don't speak much. You know, they kind of grunt or, you know. So maybe he wasn't the most talkative person at 12. And so, you know, maybe they didn't notice that he wasn't in the group. And they thought, you know, there were other relatives present. He must just be with that other group that was traveling. So, you know, they do their thing in Jerusalem, and they leave, and they travel for a day. For a day! And then they think to check, "Wait a minute, you do have Jesus, right? Like, he's with you guys." And of course, they're like, "Oh, we thought he was with you." And so then I imagine that the royal freakout commences. They're a day away from Jerusalem. They have to go back to Jerusalem and start searching a city of thousands upon thousands of people for one 12-year-old boy who's gotten it in his head that he just doesn't need to listen to his parents and he's going to wander off wherever he feels like it. And they go around and around the city for 3 days. Now, when Ariana was missing in both of those stories, it was maybe 10 minutes. 3 days they're looking for this kid. And when they find him in the temple, it says his parents were amazed. Maybe it's because you can't put the word I would have used in the Bible. But I don't think amazed is the emotion that they experienced. It was one of those, "We're so glad to see you that we are now going to kill you. And then we're going to put you back together and we're going to kill you again." You know, what are you thinking? I mean, at least they give Mary like a kind of reasonable, normal reaction. "Son, Why did you do that? Did it not occur to you that your father and I would be, oh, I don't know, a little bit concerned about where our only child at this point, well, maybe not only child, but oldest child is? Did it not occur to you to say, oh, hey, guys, wait up, I'm going to go hang in the temple for a little bit, or, you know, maybe leave with the rest of your family? I mean, I imagine he got a little bit more than a, oh, gee, I'm amazed. What did you think you were doing? I mean, this must be a little bit of a royal berating going on there for young Jesus. But there he is, just like Ariana, with the toys on the porch or with the exhibit in the museum, just sitting in the temple like it's, you know, no big thing. Hanging out, having an intellectual, theological conversation, like he does it all the time, while his parents are freaking out and turning the city inside out, looking for him. And he says, why did you do that for? Why'd you have to go and get all worried and run around the city like maniacs looking for me? Didn't you know I would be in my father's house? I'd probably have smacked him for that one. Why did we do that? But that's... And his parents are amazed again. They don't understand what he means. Yeah, I'll give you, I don't understand what you mean. But we learn from Jesus at that point and later in the gospel that he has a kind of different understanding about who his family is, right? And he has a different understanding of where his loyalties lie. There's another scene in the gospel a little bit later where he's speaking to a group of people and he says something. You know, they say, hey, you know, your mother and your brothers are outside. And he says, who are my mother and brothers? Anyone who does the will of God is my father and mother and brother and sister. I imagine that the woman who gave birth to him had something to say about that, but he has this sense that his family is a spiritual family, and that his loyalty and his devotion is to that higher calling, to his God, to his heavenly father. And his earthly parents are, well, wonderful people, just part of his human family, but that he has this enormous, far-reaching and upwardly reaching, if you will, spiritual family. And it is to them that he owes his loyalty and his allegiance. And that's the place that you should go looking for him, because he's obviously going to be in his father's house, hanging out. Wise guy, well, whippersnapper, but that's where he is. He's hanging out in his father's house because that's the most natural place in the world to look for him. Now, the kind of irony of this story is that at first it might seem that Jesus wanders off, you know, although more accurately when you kind of think about it, Jesus stays put and everybody else wanders off. It's his parents and his family and his friends who go about their daily lives without stopping to check to make sure that Jesus is with them. And they get a ways down the road before they think to look. And that strikes me as something that we are capable of, something that we do, you know, much more than the kids disappearing thing. At least kids usually wander off. But as people of faith, we're the ones that do the wandering. Or we go back home, we go about our daily lives, and we get a day's journey down the road, and then we go, oh, wait, is Jesus with us? Well, I thought he was with you. I thought he was in the other group. And we turn around, and we realize that we've kind of strayed from the path, or we've kind of wandered away from God's presence, you know? I mean, it was like he was just born. How did we forget? How did we get this far already? But, you know, we remind ourselves, oh, wait a minute. You know, I've kind of gotten a day down the road, or a week down the road, or a month or a year down the road, and all of a sudden I have to stop and ask myself, am I still in the presence of Christ? Or have I just totally wandered off into a totally different place? And the good news is, I mean, we'll go back, we'll turn around, and we go back and we go looking for Jesus. And he's usually in the places where, you know, he's told us he's going to be. In his father's house, yes. In the presence of the people that he loved, the poor, the needy, the ones who were in need of comfort and blessing. In the presence of the folks that we love, when we see the light in their eyes or we see the love in their hearts and we know that we have come back to the temple that is Christ's home, that is the Father's house. Unfortunately, perhaps for us, unlike when a child goes missing for a moment, and we panic, and we have an immediate sense that there's something wrong. It can take us a while to notice that we've wandered away from Jesus, or that we've gone about our daily routines without checking to see if he's anywhere nearby, checking to see if we've left him in some temple built perhaps not with human hands, but built in our hearts. If we've left him somewhere and we've just gone back along the road home. In a way, it would be great if we had that immediate sense that there was someone missing, there was something wrong, so that we could turn around and go back before we got miles and miles down the road, before, you know, we had to spend days and weeks and months looking, trying to find that sense of being in God's presence again. But the good news is that we can always look, we can always go back, and we can always seek God again. And when we do, we'll usually find God, usually find Christ, right where we would have left, right where we should expect. Perhaps not only in churches or temples, but in the temple that is the human heart. There's a tradition in the United Methodist Church of beginning the new year, or closing out an old year, depending on how you look at it, with a recommitment to one's spiritual journey, a recommitment to one's faith, and either with a creed or with the words of the covenant prayer, which is one of my favorite prayers. It's on page 607 in the hymnal. I'm going to tell you a little bit about it first, because it's a special prayer to me. But the idea is that if we start again at the beginning of the year, kind of reminding ourselves and placing ourselves in God's presence, that kind of gives us a sort of like a New Year's resolution, but gives us a place to start from and to begin our spiritual journey again, or anew or afresh, if we've perhaps wandered along our ordinary paths without checking to see if Jesus was traveling with us. I discovered this prayer at some point in my seminary career, but my last year and the last few months of seminary, it became somewhat of a mantra for me. When I was finishing out seminary, I graduated toward the end of May, and we had an apartment just outside of Boston, about half hour outside Boston, in Norwood, Massachusetts, and we told the landlord that we were going to be there until the end of June. And then I was going to be appointed and go to a church. And long about the beginning of May, I started calling and emailing and nudging the district superintendents and saying, right, there's going to be a church somewhere, right? And weeks passed, and more weeks passed. And in fact, it was mid-June, and I still hadn't heard anything about any church anywhere. And I'm calling the DS and I'm saying, okay, so you know, we booked a rental van and they kind of wanted to know where it was going with all the furniture. And I told them my mother-in-law's house, because it's got an extra bedroom at least that we could stay in, but you know, it would be good to give them a destination. And so I began praying this prayer probably about the middle of May. At least once a day, sometimes many, many more times a day. Different lines hit me at different times, but the one that got me then was, let me be employed by thee or laid aside for thee, which was a tough one. And I prayed it over and over and over again until I could almost mean it. But it was a reminder for me that it was not in my control and that it was God I was serving. And so if there was a place that God needed me to be and wanted us to be, then we'd be there, and if there wasn't, then the moving van was going to go to North Ferrisburg, apparently, and deposit all of our stuff and us there, and we'd take it from there. The happy ending to the story is that about the third week in June, on a Tuesday night, I interviewed with a church in Castleton on Hudson, New York, and the fourth week in June, on a Monday afternoon, I unloaded a moving van in Castleton on Hudson, New York, and Benji and I started that chapter of our life together, and we're soon joined by another part of our family. But you know, it was for me, what got me through that difficult time and that anxious time was reminding myself that I'm in God's hands, and this is God's calling to me. Whatever God's calling is to you, that it's God's calling to you, and There is nothing we can do to rush it or push it or make it other than it is, but just open ourselves up and place ourselves in the hands of God, in the presence of Christ. So I invite you, as we say farewell to 2009 and we begin 2010, to reflect on this prayer and to join me in saying this prayer, that perhaps it helps us find our way back to Jesus if we've wandered a bit astray. I am no longer my own, but thine. Put me to what thou wilt, rank me with whom thou wilt. Put me to doing, put me to suffering. Let me be employed by thee or laid aside for thee, exalted for thee or brought low by thee. Let me be full, let me be empty. Let me have all things, let me have nothing. I freely and heartily yield all things to thy pleasure and disposal. And now, O glorious and blessed God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, thou art mine, and I am thine. So be it. And the covenant which I have made on earth, let it be ratified in heaven.